Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
But first this morning, this deal which would see a ceasefire in Gaza and the release of hostages is on the brink of being completed. That was according to the US President Joe Biden, raising hopes that an end is in sight for the 15-month conflict. The possible breakthrough comes after threats by US President-elect Donald Trump that all hell will break loose if no agreement is reached by the time he takes office on the 20th of January, in just 6 days' time. Let's get the latest now from Bel True, Chief International Correspondent with the London Independent. And shortly we'll speak to Shashank Joshi, who's Defence Editor at The Economist. But first, Bel, to you. So this proposed ceasefire deal, we have quite a lot of detail emerging now. What's in it?
Well, according to the sources that I'm speaking to, it's a multi-phased ceasefire. It's largely based off on the draft that was tabled at the end of the autumn of last year. Now, the first stage would be around 6 weeks, and this would see the release of Israeli hostages, 33 of them, including children, women, including female soldiers, and men above 50, the wounded and the sick. Israel believes that most of those are alive, but again, we don't have full confirmation. That would include also the release of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli prisons right now. The exact number is not, the ratio is still being decided at the moment. If that goes to plan, then we'd move into the second, negotiations would start for the second stage that would see remaining hostages released, including soldiers. Again, these details are being decided right now. And then in a final phase, we could also see the withdrawal of Israeli troops from Gaza, provided all the previous stages are negotiated correctly and carried out correctly and all parties agreed. So basically, we get more vague as we get into the further stages. But at the beginning, we are looking at the release of around 33 hostages.
And this would happen very quickly. Well, according to the BBC this morning, they say on day one, there would be three hostages released. Then you'd have Israel withdrawing from the heavily populated areas. So if this were to be agreed, there would be considerable movement at the very start.
Yes, and I think that's aimed for there to be actual action for this. And of course, with the release of the hostages, would also be the release of Palestinian prisoners and detainees. But there's big ifs here, because at the moment they are still getting those fine details down on paper, and also if anything is violated in those processes, then the rest of it will collapse. So it's still quite tense, and there's still final details to come, but we are looking far closer than we ever have been since the last ceasefire in November 2023.
So the current state of play is, are we waiting for a Hamas response to the proposal?
At the moment, we're looking for the actual details and a response from both sides. So it's not just on Hamas. It's on both sides to agree to the specifics of the detail, and so details of the agreement. Once that has been approved, then it will be announced. But again, it's quite tense. There's a lot that needs to be guaranteed before the full final of all the phases are completed.
So you said there at the beginning that this is quite similar to a previous deal that was on the table. That one obviously didn't get through. It didn't work. What's different this time, Bel, in your view, or what are your sources telling you about what's different?
The key difference that sources are telling me is essentially the change of administration in America, the inauguration of Donald Trump. It has been seen to be as a cutoff point, both from the Biden administration that want to see this deal pushed through whilst Joe Biden's still in office, and also from the Trump administration, because Trump has made it very clear to his Israeli leadership that he does not want this war to continue under his watch, that he wants a ceasefire to be in place. So everyone's agreed, whatever side of the divide that you're on, that there's a feeling that the inauguration of Donald Trump is somehow a watershed moment that means this has to be pushed through. And so I think that's what the key difference is in comparison to last year.
I know over the course of all of this, over the last 15 months, Bel, you have kept in really close contact with the families of the hostages who were taken from Israel. And for them, I mean, this is a huge moment, because they have been waiting for so long for something to happen. Have you been in touch with any of them in recent days?
I have. I mean, literally in the last 24 hours, they have gone quiet, and that's out of respect to the families who are obviously very, very nervous because things have fallen through in the past. But definitely over the last few days and few weeks, they and months, years, they have been in the streets continuously demanding a ceasefire, saying, bring them home at whatever cost. The first, priority should be bringing the hostages home. So for them, this is a really crucial moment. A lot of them don't even know if their loved ones are alive or not. There is no clarity over of the around 100 remaining hostages, which ones are still alive and which ones aren't. And so this will also be a moment for them potentially to find out whether their loved ones are alive or not.
Right.
So for them, I think it's extremely tense.
It certainly is, Belle. Thank you very much for being with us. Belle True from the London Independent. And as I said, Shashank Joshi is also with us from The Economist. So it would seem from what Belle is saying and others are telling us too, Shashank, that it is the upcoming inauguration of Donald Trump next week that put additional pressure on this deal being done. Do you agree with that assessment?
I think that's absolutely right. We've seen a very active involvement both from Jake Sullivan, from the Biden team, but also from Trump's Middle East envoy, who by all accounts put quite a bit of pressure on Benjamin Netanyahu in the last few days. I will add one more factor, I think, which distinguishes this moment from previous ones where we've been close to diplomacy, and that is that Iran's system of allies and partners in the region, including Hamas, has been significantly weakened by a number of factors, including the collapse of Hezbollah in Lebanon, the overt Israeli strikes on Iran that destroyed a year's worth of missile production and took down Iran's air defense system, and the general sense that Iran is in a significantly more enfeebled position. That may have affected Hamas's decision-making around the prospect of this deal and whether it's worth taking or not.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think Netanyahu, if he is to respond, will react to this pressure from Donald Trump? Because we know that he has pressure coming from the other side, from the right-wing elements of his own party.
Well, that's right. Not just his own party, but really his own political coalition. And we saw just now in the Israeli press reports that the National Security Minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, who's a very controversial figure, a far-right figure really, said he had repeatedly foiled a hostage deal over the past year. And that provoked understandable outrage among a lot of people. So Netanyahu has had to balance those considerations. But really, for Israel, America is the essential partner. It is the most important ally. And looking forward to this year, I think Netanyahu will be asking if Iran if Israel wants to strike Iran's nuclear facilities or the Iranian leadership, as it may well do, it clearly sees an opportunity, it will need American support. And therefore, there's no point in getting off with the Trump administration on radically the wrong foot.
Mm-hmm. And that is the basis for it. Because I'm sure people listening to this will hear us saying that it was the impending inauguration that really moved this ahead without really understanding why that is the case. I mean, was it the threat from Donald Trump in relation to Hamas that all hell will break loose? Was that what did it? What do you think was the real impetus for moving?
Well, I suspect it's the prospect on all sides of the Trump administration taking a more radical path to apply pressure on the belligerents. And that could be, for example, on the Hamas side, the threat to allow an even freer hand to Israel in Gaza. Obviously, critics would say that the Biden administration has allowed Israel a pretty free hand despite its public rhetoric, but an even freer hand that would put even more pressure on Hamas and its regional supporters. The other side of it, of course, is that Trump sees himself as a deal maker. We see this not just in the Middle East, but also in his public profession to end the war in Ukraine in a single day. And so if he says he wants a deal and then he is, that's flouted by one of his partners, you can see why there may be fear that he could take a very dramatic and drastic approach, for example, of cutting off aid or taking a very radical step that other politicians and other leaders wouldn't do. Now, if this all works out, I suspect the Trump team will frame this as being an example of why Trump's uniquely, radical approach, and of course I'm putting that very diplomatically, you could have other words for it, is something that may get results in some cases.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, the Biden administration will try to claim this. I mean, even Joe Biden's statement in the last couple of days where he said the blueprint of this is it's the exact same deal as I put on the table. So we see the signs there.
Yes.
That both administrations will try to claim the credit here.
Well, I think it's very unusual, very, very unusual for an incoming administration, prior to its inauguration, which of course is in about 6 days, to play such an important and prominent role in diplomacy. You know, the rule was always America has one president at a time, one administration at a time. And it was deemed to be very unhelpful, constitutionally dicey if the next administration is beginning to play a role before it's in office. In fact, that actually violates some American laws. The Logan Act is one of them, although it's never enforced. And so this is a really difficult moment for the Biden camp, because they clearly see there is utility in having the Trump team put pressure on the Israelis and on implicitly on Hamas, but it also does undercut their authority in their final week in office.
Yeah, it's interesting as well. I mean, this guy, Stephen Witkoff, who is the special envoy to the Middle East appointed by Donald Trump, he was really written off when he was appointed because he is a real estate investor. He's a landlord. He's a property guy.
Well, like many of Trump's envoys, he has no real expertise. In fact, Mr. Witkoff's deputy, I think, is Tiffany Trump's father-in-law, the president's daughter's president-elect's daughter's father-in-law. Mm-hmm. So clearly, there are a lot of, on paper, very unqualified people taking quite senior positions in this administration. In fact, just today, I think, is a confirmation hearing for the next defense secretary, who also has very little experience. But the point is, of course, that these guys may not be experienced negotiators or diplomats, but they are speaking with, in this case, it seems, with the authority of Donald Trump, and that still counts for something.
Can we just talk about the impact that you think this will have in the Middle East if it comes to pass, if the ceasefire comes into place? What do you think will happen as a result in the wider area?
Well, it's really worth emphasising, as I think Bell just did earlier, that this is not the end of it. So after 16 days, I think there is a process after which really the two sides have to continue to negotiate on some pretty significant things, including, I believe, other longer term status of Israel on Gazan soil, Israel's status in the Philadelphia corridor in that narrow strip of territory along from Egypt, the other Hamas concessions. So this could, you know, hold for 16 days and it could then collapse and break down. So I really want to flag that possibility. But if it does hold, I think it will bring, you know, the single most important thing this would bring is respite for the people of Gaza. And of course, the return of the hostages to the families who've been without them for well over a year. That would be the single most important thing. Mm-hmm. More broadly than that, depending on whether Israel is then willing to think about a political future for Gaza and a pathway to a more positive political state for the Palestinians, whether that's a two-state solution or something else, that will shape how the Arab states respond. So whether or not Saudi Arabia and others are willing then to go back on the path of overt normalization with Israel, that will depend on, I think, how Israel builds on this.
Shashank, thank you very much, as always, for joining us. Shashank Joshi there from The Economist. Now, coming up next, we'll have the latest from the United States. LA is under a red flag weather warning, and we have news of this new report, which says Donald Trump would have been convicted over his efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election result. That's after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.